Today on Straight Talk Africa, former Cuban president Fidel Castro is dead at the age of 90. His communist government survived a U.S.-backed invasion of Cuban exiles, a superpower missile crisis, assassination plots, and decades of U.S. economic sanctions. His influence on African and world politics examined next, right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello and welcome to Straight Talk Africa live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I'm Esther Githui Ewart. Shaka Sali is on assignment.
Well, hello to you, Esther, and hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, we'll talk about Fidel Castro's impact on Africa.
Lots of reactions on this one, Esther, coming up later in our STA inbox. We'll share your thoughts on the topic. That's through your emails, tweets, and Facebook comments. That's ahead on Straight Talk Africa. Hope you'll stay with us.
Fidel Castro lived long enough to see Washington announce the reestablishment of full diplomatic relations with Havana in the subsequent visit by a sitting U.S. president to the island in March 2016. VOA's Bill Rogers has this profile of the man.
Fidel Castro Ruz was born August 13, 1926, and grew up to become one of the leaders of the movement against the dictatorship of Fulgencio Batista. He led a guerrilla force that eventually routed Batista's army and took over the island in 1959. His victory and triumphant entry into Havana captured the world's attention, but soon he steered the country toward communism and the orbit of the Soviet Union. Cuban pro-democracy activist Frank Calzon.
He's a man who made a lot of promises to the Cuban people. Cubans were going to have freedom, they're going to have honest government, they're going to have a return to the Constitution. Instead, what he gave him was a Stalinist type of government.
The United States mounted an invasion of Cuba by a group of Cuban exiles in 1961, but Castro's forces crushed the invaders at the Bay of Pigs. 1 year later, Cuba was at the center of a confrontation between the United States and the Soviet Union over the placement of nuclear missiles on the island. A nuclear war was narrowly averted. As a close ally of Moscow, Fidel Castro deployed Cuban troops to various Cold War hotspots, such as Angola. His policies turned Cuba into an international player. Cuba expert Wayne Smith.
I think he will be remembered as the leader who put Cuba on the world map. Before Castro, Cuba was considered something of a banana republic. It didn't count for anything in world politics. Castro certainly changed all that, and suddenly Cuba was playing a major role on the world stage, in Africa, as an ally of the Soviet Union, in Asia and so forth, and certainly in Latin America.
At home, universal education and health care were accomplishments that came at the cost of human rights and democracy. Dissidents were thrown in jail, and their relatives who protested were often intimidated by pro-government mobs. Cuban pro-democracy activist Frank Calzon.
Fidel Castro kept power through fear, through the use of a secret police, through manipulating political forces, just like Stalin did, or just like Hitler did.
Mr. Castro frequently denounced the United States, often staging mass rallies to protest the U.S. economic embargo against his country. Despite decades of U.S. pressure, he managed to stay in power until being sidelined by intestinal surgery in July 2006. The ailing leader formally relinquished the presidency in February 2008. Later that month, his younger brother Raul, who had been acting president, officially assumed the post after a pro forma election by Cuba's National Assembly. Fidel Castro's thoughts on various subjects continue to be faithfully published in Cuba's state-run newspaper. He also received visitors, such as close friend and ally, Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez, along with other dignitaries. And it was his continued presence on the world stage that made him unique, says Philip Peters, a Cuba specialist at the Lexington Institute.
I think all admit he's a very large historical figure who won a very impressive military victory in the Cuban Revolution, who maneuvered through very difficult circumstances in the international sphere. He put Cuba on the map in many ways, far beyond its importance in history, far beyond its economic capabilities.
But the Cuban people paid a heavy price, says Frank Calzone.
Whatever good he did, the cost of the Cuban people have to pay in lives, in suffering, in torture, far exceeds whatever positive could be said about him.
Tyrant or revolutionary, Fidel Castro remained at the center of the world's media spotlight until the end, an object of fascination for some and repudiation for others. Bill Rogers, VOA News.
And thank you, Bill, for that report. And as the Cold War between the United States and the USSR seeped into Africa, Castro's revolutionary ideas inspired Africa's liberators, too. VOA's Paul Sisco has more.
In the 1950s, Fidel Castro's revolution and support for African liberation on the continent inspired its freedom fighters and many of its eventual leaders. Like David N. Goliath, Castro's island nation would not back down to the United States, the world power to its north. And he supported, with words, troops, and resources, Africa's independence and determination to break the grip of its oppressive, colonizing powers. South Africa's Jacob Zuma, Equatorial Guinea's Teodoro Obiang, and Zimbabwe's Robert Mugabe were among the first to announce their attendance at Castro's funeral.
Fidel was not just your leader. He was our leader and the leader of all revolutionaries.
Fidel Castro means a lot.
Para nosotros, el presidente Fidel Castro significa muchísimo.
To our struggle and to our freedom as well.
Castro is still celebrated in Africa for very good reason. In the 1960s, Castro and Che Guevara, allied with Fidel since the Cuban Revolution, supported Angola's MPLA, the People's Movement for the Liberation of Angola, in its anti-colonial struggle against Portugal. By the mid-70s, the freedom fight in Angola pitted their forces against those of apartheid-led South Africa and, covertly, the United States, intent on stopping what it saw as the rise of Soviet influence and global communism in Angola and in southern Africa. The Goliath America continued to support South Africa's apartheid regimes into the mid-80s. While Castro's support for African independence, often against U.S.-backed regimes, fueled relations between the United States and Castro throughout the Cold War. In eastern Africa, Castro intervened militarily in the 1970s on behalf of the Ethiopian dictator, Lieutenant Colonel Mengistu Haile Mariam. He participated in a successful coup against the U.S.-backed Haile Selassie in 1974. Castro's African influence continues. Within days of the 2014 Ebola outbreak, Cuba sent the largest contingent of doctors to West Africa. Thousands of South Sudanese and medical personnel from across the continent have been educated and trained in Cuba. Soon after Nelson Mandela's release from prison, Mandela went to Havana, thanking Castro for his support in the anti-apartheid movement. At Mandela's subsequent inaugural, as South Africa's first black president, Castro, in attendance, called him a source of inspiration to all freedom-loving people. And it was at Mandela's memorial on December 5, 2013, that President Obama shook Raul Castro's hand, bringing on the long-overdue thawing of U.S.-Cuban diplomatic relations underway today. Paul Sisco, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. I'll introduce our studio guest shortly, but joining us first live via Skype is Professor Abdi Samatar of the University of Minnesota. Professor Samatar, welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Pleasure to be with you, Esther.
Professor, Fidel Castro has often been referred to as a dictator. How did he bolster his dictatorship in countries such as Ethiopia?
I think it's very important to look at Castro as a very complex man. rather than as a somebody who is a monocropic in the sense of being one thing. He was multiple things, and the case of Ethiopia will identify. He was an authoritarian leader, but also he was a liberator. He was both of those things. So in the case of Ethiopia, he intervened not on the part of Mengistu Haile Mariam during the overthrow of Haile Selassie. That's not the case. But in fact, he supported Ethiopia in its sort of aggression against Somalia in 1977 and ultimately enabled Ethiopia to defeat the Somali army. So that's one instance. The other instance of Castro is that he was a political liberator. If you think of Angola, if you think of South Africa, if you think of Namibia, in all of those instances, he was quite key. So it's very important to keep in mind the complexity of the man and what he did both for the Cuban people and others in Africa.
Professor, again, when you look at Fidel Castro and Cuba itself, they're credited with professional medical services. And it is reported that he also provided medical services to some indigenous communities of Africa. Is that so?
That is exactly the case. I will remember in the 1998 non-aligned movement meeting in Durban, South Africa. And I was a commentator for the South African Broadcasting Service, TV. And Mandela was standing on one end of the hall, and the sort of dignitaries were coming from the other end. When President Castro got into the door, and there was maybe a space of about 25 meters between them, Mandela could not restrain himself in moving forward towards Castro and welcoming him there. There signaled somebody like Mandela, who was a liberal democrat, who was a liberator of his people, appreciating the kind of a role Castro played in this. And most importantly, Castro did in fact send medical people, doctors and whatnot, even to South Africa after liberation. So if African dictators, who were many for too long, in fact did what Castro did for his people, I would argue the African people will be in a different health and a different state of education today.
You do mention South Africa, and you are a research fellow at the University of Pretoria. Do you really look at his contribution as liberation towards Southern Africa, or some of that was probably perhaps just for personal purposes?
No, I think he was quite genuine. If you look at the liberation of Namibia from apartheid South Africa, South Africans intervened not only in Namibia, but they actually went into Angola. And there in a place called Quito Cuanaval, in southern end of Angola, was the first place where the South African army was fully defeated by the Cubans and the Angolan liberation movements and government. And it's the tide that turned against apartheid, leading to the liberation of Namibia shortly thereafter, and ultimately South Africa. So we need to understand the mixed personality that he was. But in this regard, I think history will vindicate that he was quite a genuine liberator and a sister for Africans.
Even though he created enmity between Ethiopia and Somalia, and to some extent you notice that the Horn of Africa still is facing some crisis.
The Horn of Africa, the conflict between Ethiopia and Somalia was there long before Castro intervened and the Soviets intervened. And I think it was less about Castro than the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union that supported the Somali military for 25 years prior to that decided to shift gears and move to Ethiopia and abandon Somalia. And only then did Castro come to the play. So I think the Soviet role in the sort of a conflict between Ethiopia and Somalia and their switching sides to conveniently serve their interests in the Cold War was the culprit rather than Cuba itself, in my opinion.
Professor, I see another professor here reacting to your comments, but we'll definitely get back to that. Thank you so much for your contribution on Straight Talk Africa, for joining
Pleasure
us live from Minnesota.
Pleasure to be with you, Esther.
Professor Abdi Samatar is a professor of geography at the University of Minnesota. Now we'll pause for a short break. We'd like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website, Twitter, and we're tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka. And join in our today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA Cuba Africa. And we're still on Facebook. Just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Become a fan and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question, keep your comment brief, and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa. Welcome back. Now joining us here in the studio are three distinguished guests, Professor Piero Gliese. He teaches American foreign policy at Johns Hopkins University and has written extensively on Castro, Washington, and the struggle for Southern Africa. Also joining us is Melvin Foote, a founder and president of Constituency for Africa and a pioneer in the field of African affairs, and Netva Freeman from the Institute for Policy Studies and a founding member of the Pan-African Community Action. A very warm welcome to you all. Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111, and the U.S. country code is 1. So, Professor Piero, let me start with you, because you were shaking your head when Professor Abdi Samatar was talking about how Castro bolstered the invasion, you know, the military invasion in Ethiopia. What is the...
Well, what happened is this. In July 1977, Somalia invaded Ethiopia. Encouraged by the Carter administration, by the way, as is shown in an excellent book by Professor Nancy Mitchell that just came out. And they wanted to dismember Ethiopia. They wanted to annex the Ogaden in southeastern Ethiopia. And Castro intervened with troops beginning in December 1977 just to protect Ethiopia, to help Ethiopia from the Somali aggression. And what is interesting is that today in Addis Ababa, where you have a regime which was of people who fought against Mengistu, you have a monument in honor of the Cuban soldiers who died to defend the territorial integrity of Ethiopia. And that's all the Cubans did in 1978, was to defend the territorial integrity of Ethiopia. And they believed, as did the CIA and the State Department in 1977, that the Ethiopian Revolution was a revolution that was bringing great benefits to the people. Because in 1977, there were positive things. An agrarian reform that was begun, cultural rights to the different populations. Then it turned into a disaster with Mengistu, but not in 1977. And what triggered the Cuban intervention had nothing to do with the Soviet Union. It had simply to do with the fact that the Cubans went to defend the revolution in which they believed, and they were wrong in their assessment of Mengistu, but they went to defend from external aggression, again encouraged by the Carter administration.
But when you look at all these points, what Professor Abdi Samatar was talking about, what you're talking about, and I'm sure they will weigh in, Castro has been referred to as a liberator in some parts of Africa and as an oppressor elsewhere.
Where?
So, well, even in Cuba.
But we're talking about Africa. Where in Africa?
Somalia, for example, when they created the upheaval between Ethiopia and Somalia, they considered him...
He didn't create anything. It had nothing to do with the Somali invasion of Ethiopia. And Cuban troops never invaded Somalia. They only fought in Ethiopia to push back the Somali invasion. If I invade you, you cannot say that I'm an oppressor if I help throw you out.
Let me get a view from Netva here. Why do you think Castro, what was his motivation to go to Southern Africa? What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think we have to look at Castro in the same way that Kwame Ture referred to Castro as a Pan-Africanist of the highest order. And so every mission in Africa was about boosting the liberation struggles in Africa, about overthrowing or stopping, and the independent struggles were already happening. So it was about assisting the already existing independent struggles in Africa against French imperialism, against Portuguese and French imperialism, against South African aggression in Southern Africa, and U.S.-backed neo-colonies. And so I concur with Professor Glahasis in terms, particularly in East Africa, it's actually a Cuban position that supporting Mengistu was a mistake. But in other parts of Africa, and even in this Eastern, as Professor Glahasis said, there's not been one instance where Cuba was supporting aggressors. It was always to aid people who were being confronted by aggression.
Okay, Melvin, your take.
Well, it's very interesting. I spent many years in East Africa at the time. I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Ethiopia during the revolution. And then I spent time in Somalia in the early 80s. So I was there when a lot of the revolution took place. I was there when Mengistu took power. And I remember as a young person, the revolution was dynamic. It was exciting. It was a complete change of things in the country. And so I was really a part. But I think that Cuba, I agree, Cuba was not there to try to influence Africa per se. It was there to really try to support liberation movements. And I think that Africa is going to always be grateful for Cuba stepping forward to help in the liberation struggles. I've talked to a lot of the presidents. I've talked to Hage Geingob in Namibia and Sam Nujoma, and I've talked to Mugabe about this. And you can't say nothing bad about Cuba in the region because they were there, and they were not only fighting the apartheid in South Africa, but they were fighting the United States. You know, they were fighting against Reagan. And so I think history will prove Fidel Castro was well thought of throughout Africa.
So,
you asked about Fidel Castro's motivations.
Yeah.
Okay. For instance, 1975, Angola. Let's look at what Kissinger says in his memoirs. He says Fidel Castro was probably the most genuine revolutionary leader then in power. Look at the reports of the CIA and the intelligence and research of the State Department. They talk about the revolutionary idealism of the Cuban Revolution. The enemy acknowledges this. Kissinger. The CIA. So, you know, what more does one want?
Now that you've written extensively about Cuba, Washington, mm-hmm. and also Southern Africa, does any of that surprise you? Any of, how he comes out? Does any of...
Yes, when I started my research, I thought that sooner or later I would find negative things that I wouldn't like in Cuba's policy in Africa. And after 20 years of research, because I wrote two books that took 20 years together, I came back with more respect for Castro's policy in Africa than when I had begun. And this is on the basis of Cuban documents, U.S. documents, South African documents, documents from about 15 countries. So, you know.
Again, Melvin, let me turn to you because you mentioned you've worked closely with those countries that we've mentioned. Castro was a communist right to the very end of his life. And yet some of his friends in Africa, especially Southern Africa, praised him and embraced his communist ideas. But yet they chose capitalism. Why the controversy? Why the conflict?
It's a paradox, but I would say that... it's a paradox. I think it was about the liberation. It was not about the economic development. And I think that these countries have embraced some aspects of communism, some aspects of socialism, but moreover, they embraced their own economic development. And if you look at the path that these countries are taking today, it's been dramatically different. I think Namibia has, taken a very pro-capital, pro-business posture, whereas, Zimbabwe, the nationalization of the land and some of the other things have taken. So I think Africa is still trying to figure out where it goes from here, but that has nothing to do with the liberation of the region.
I see you're raising your...
Yes, with all due respect to my friend here, there is no paradox. What the Cubans did throughout the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, was to support liberation movement whether they were communist or not. The liberation movements the Cuban admired the most in Africa in the 1960s was the liberation movement of Guinea-Bissau, of Amilcar Cabral. Amilcar Cabral never claimed to be a communist or anything, and he had unconditional Cuban support. Mm-hmm. The support to SWAPO. Njoma never claimed to be a communist, and the Cuban support to SWAPO was extremely strong, etc., etc. And the same with the ANC. What, this is one other thing to admire about Fidel Castro and Cuban policy in Africa. Fidel Castro may have been a communist, but he was not trying to impose anything on anyone. He was fighting for the liberation of Africa. And when he came to Southern Africa, his focus was what he called la causa más bonita de la humanidad, the most beautiful cause of mankind, the struggle against apartheid. And that's why someone like Nelson Mandela, who was certainly not a communist, could embrace him, etc., etc.
Let me take a break and we'll continue. You're tuned in to... All right, I'm told keep it in the studio. All right, you're tuned in to Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of the discussion in a moment. It looks like the producer wants us to continue. Netpa, I see you raising your hand again. Maybe tell us a little more of what you think, especially on his greatest successes and his biggest failures.
I'm piggybacking what Professor Glahases, and have to say the support was about liberation struggles, and you can see it reflected in the continued support in Africa through doctors and teachers and technicians. It doesn't have to be, and then all, it doesn't matter what the ideology was or anything, and a prime directive of Cuba's always has been not to interfere in the political politics of a particular country. Same thing with the United States, even offered, and I would say again, this is, we have to look at it also, if we look at it as a, through the lens of a Pan-Africanist struggle, offered medical assistance and emergency assistance to people in of African descent mostly affected in Katrina that the United States denied. And so you have Cuban doctors and teachers going to remote places in Africa, in Haiti and other places in the, what we would call the African world, doing things that even people, residents of those places won't even do. And it's unconditional. It has nothing to do with whether they abide by an ideology of communism or not. And then you might be able to say that it's a reflective of, we talk about the terms, we use terms communism and socialism is what Cuba was, but not really talk about what it means. We kind of bandy around the term and it gets lost in its meaning, and there's so much to demonize the term and to back. But communism being, in essence, trying to provide the people with basic human needs, medical care, education, you know, right to a job, those kind of things, fundamental things that people need is really what it's about. But when you live in a capitalist society where those things are not human rights, you see that the opposite is true. People will demonize such an idea. So if we look at, like Professor Glahases said, if we look at in Africa or even in the United States, the black liberation struggles should be seen as an extension of the Pan-African movement, were attacked by the FBI in a COINTELPRO operation. It was Fidel Castro and the Cuban Revolution that were able to give people political asylum, like Assata Secor and Nahanda Mbundian, who's there now, and many others who have come through and not, whatnot. And so we should see this as, if we talk about Fidel Castro's intent, this is consistent in how the involvement in other places around the world and unconditional internationalism that's not about imposing a will, but giving people the assistance that they ask for.
But again, Melvin, when you look at it, why don't we see a lot of Africans then embracing his kind of leadership, you know, that communism kind of leadership in Africa? We don't see much yet. Like you say, he has supporters. Abdelaziz Bouteflika of Algeria declared 8 days of national mourning when he died. Namibia's president referred to him as a mentor. We saw some of the African presidents at his funeral, like Mugabe of Zimbabwe and Jacob Zuma.
I will say that in some respects, Castro was more African than anywhere in Africa, you know, and that might be a funny thing to say, but he believed in Pan-Africanism. He believed in international coalitions of the oppressed people, and he actually actualized it. But if you go back and look at some of the readings and some of the stuff, and you'll see where he ran into all kinds of contradictions over tribalism and ethnicity and un-African, if you will. So I think that he had the spirit of what the Pan-African cause was about. I think the biggest contradiction is back, he was against the United States. He was an ally with Russia, and I think that that Cold War, the way it played out, painted him as a person who was not to be dealt with, and going to always be painted as a person who did bad things, who did not embrace Africa. But from the African standpoint, I see statues going up. I see roads being named after him. I see all kinds of things to show that forever he'll be remembered as the person who helped to liberate the continent from the yoke of colonialism.
We'll see what the young folks on social media are saying soon after that about him. Okay, you tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of our discussion in just a moment. But first, here's Mariama Diallo. Over to you, Mariama.
Well, Esther, it's not just the young folks. Even now, the old, the younger, the middle ages, everyone is on social media. Still to come, we'll reveal some of the fantastic feedback we've received from our audience through social media. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on the Voice of America. For more information, visit our website at voanews.com/African Beat.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number is 202-619-3111 and the U.S. country code is 1. Call us direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to turn down the volume on your radio or television and keep your comments brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
And welcome back to Straight Talk Africa from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter. Over to you again, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Esther. As we mentioned earlier, Fidel Alejandro Castro ruled the Caribbean island of Cuba for 47 years. And whether some agree or disagree, he has left an imprint on almost every major revolutionary effort in Africa since 1959. Well, this leads us to our question of the week, asking, what impact did Fidel Castro had on Africa? Starting off the conversation is a listener from Tanzania with our letter of the week.
Kanama in Tanzania writes, Tanzania trains many doctors in Cuba. Angola managed to expel Portugal due to material support from Cuba. As Africans, we were inspired by his revolutionary method of attaining our independence from the whites.
Well, that was Harry Kanama in Tanzania. And before we move on to more of your comments, I'd like to thank everyone for using all our social media platforms to communicate with us. And another reminder that we are tweeting live today. Just use the hashtag VOACubaAfrica. And you haven't yet, if you haven't yet, rather, do follow us at VOA Shaka. Speaking of it, let's go to a tweet from Emmanuel Cacelle, who writes that Fidel Castro tremendously helped Africa get rid of the colonial chains, but later African leaders forgot him. Now to a comment from our Facebook followers, this time from Mohamed Ahmed Mansour in Monrovia, Liberia, who writes, Fidel Castro made a deep, lasting impact on Africa as the continent shook off the yoke of colonialism. Many on the continent will remember him as a key ally to African independence movements and as a generous man who provided doctors and teachers to poor societies. Well, Esther and guests, what do you make of these comments?
Any comment from the social media, Professor? He made a lasting impression on the African continent, you agree?
Yes, and what is interesting, Fidel Castro changed the course of the history of Southern Africa. And he did it not only challenging and defeating the United States, But the two key moments, even challenging the Soviet Union, there has been a lot of talk about Castro, the Soviet Union, etc. Fidel Castro challenged the Soviet Union in 1975 and again in 1988 to save Angola. If you want, I can provide detail, but just let me start with the statement.
All right. Mariama, any more surprises maybe from the social media?
Well, yeah, we'll actually have some more. We'll go to our Facebook followers, this time from Akiza Tom Tumusime from Ethiopia, who writes, "True love from a true friend of Africa was exhibited by the famous great hero Fidel Castro, who liberated most African countries from imposed injustices by white supremacy in the form of apartheid, colonization, imperialism, racism, and exploitation of African resources. Rest in peace," he writes. And another comment from Samuel Habtu in Eritrea, who completely disagrees with the previous comment and says, "Fidel Castro is still a dictator no matter what you say about him. He is history now, an icon for African dictators." Well, I think he's probably no longer a dictator since he's gone, but also the fact that not everyone had a rosy kind of opinion about Castro's legacy in Africa. Once again, Esther and guests, your thoughts.
Natwa, I see you looking at me.
Yeah, because, I mean, I thought it was interesting. One comment said, well, he helped a lot of Africa, and African leaders forgot him. And I think there is a lot to be said about the fact that it was an opportune moment for leaders to establish the type of things that the Cuban citizens enjoy, free health care, all of these things. And then the United States, in every turn where you see, Cuba and its relationship to Africa, meeting the heads of state of, during its independence, there was that we're talking about Nkrumah, all these people that they met. On the other hand, the United States, like the United States, were responsible for overthrowing or had their hand in overthrowing Kwame Nkrumah, overthrowing Patrice Lumumba. And so Cuba's thing was the opposite. The Western world, particularly the United States, doesn't like that and has such a power over when it comes to propaganda and messaging, we often keep hearing Fidel Castro is referred to as a dictator. And even the last person said he's a dictator no matter what you say. And we're kind of saying with the presumption of not knowing anything about the Cuban system, Fidel was in office. He held office in Cuba. They do have elections. It might not be the same structure as anyplace else, but they hold elections. And they're very actually have 90-some% participation in their electoral process by the citizens. I mean, it's a very interesting process where even segments of the society hold representation in the National Assembly, like women and youth and workers. And so these are not, these things are not really reflective of a real understanding of the internal workings of Cuba. But I would like to say in relationship, need to say, I think, lessons for Africa. And what the one person was referring to on social media as forgetting African leaders forgot him is that we can see all over Africa neocolonialism. People, and we keep talking about Africa and the leaders and their either embrace of capitalism or communism, but it's not in a vacuum. We live in a global economy that leverages its will through institutions like the IMF and World Bank and forces countries to take structural adjustment programs and things like lowering their wages and encouraging foreign investing and not being self-reliant, which is what Cuba represents to the world and to not just helping and assisting independent struggles, but actually being an example for independent struggles, which people have not been seeing their leaders in Africa take up that same example. So I think we can see why people the overwhelming sentiment is for regard for for Africa in Eritrea. And I don't want to judge people's positions for this, but we can see and it was in East Africa, which is the most controversial, and we can say that even Fidel Castro and Cuba has said they made a mistake in that intervention there. And so the sentiments there might be a little different. But overwhelmingly, I think we have to consider the example and also the messaging that we're using is coming from those adversaries that have a vested interest in the opposite as happening in Africa.
I think Mariama did pick up very varied opinions from our fans, Twitter fans, and also Facebook fans. Professor, I see you want to react to some of that.
I would like to one moment to what my friend there said. The Cubans made a mistake in their assessment of Mengistu, but they did not make a mistake in sending troops to stop the Somali invasion, which went against international law, which against the charter of the OEU, etc., etc. So there was no Cuban mistake. It was in upholding international law and the principle most dear to the governments and people of Africa, the intangibility of the borders inherited, etc., etc. But I wanted to move discussion a little bit in another sense. We have talked about the military contribution of Cuba. We have talked about the Cuban doctors, etc., in Africa. But there are also the Africans who went to train in Cuba, more than 30,000 during the Cold War. Let me give you a small personal experience. Once in Conakry, I was with a Cuban friend. He had to go to the Ministry of Agriculture. I had nothing to do. I went with him. And there, in the Ministry...
We continue after we let our social media wrap up.
Okay, so shall I stop?
I'll get back to you. So, Mariama, I don't know if you have any new tweet or any more Facebook comment from our fans. Otherwise, perhaps that does it for your segment. I'm not sure.
Well, thank you, Esther, and definitely we look forward to hearing that story. It sounds like it's a great story, and please stay tuned. This will do it for the today's social media segment and to all the other comment we couldn't get to. My apology. Just want to remind you that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate to us. Please keep them coming. And if you are a new fan, just drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com. Or you can join our YouTube channel. Just sign up to VOA TV to Africa. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter. A reminder that the show is streaming live every Wednesday. Just go to the VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website or simply watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Well, now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program. Next on Straight Talk Africa, Gambians across Africa and elsewhere rejoice at news that longtime ruler Yahya Jammeh conceded defeat in the country's presidential election. Today, Ghanaians go to the polls to elect a new leader. We take an in-depth look at the elections in the Gambia and Ghana right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Welcome back. Today we're talking about Fidel Castro's impact on Africa. Our distinguished guests are Professor Pierre Ogliesis of Johns Hopkins University, Melvin Foote, founder and president of Constituency for Africa, and Netfa Freeman, a founding member of the Pan-African Community Action. Now, Professor, you are burning to finish your comments.
Fine. Yes. So I went to the Ministry of Agriculture with this Cuban friend. And a lot of people were speaking to him in Spanish, and the language in Conakry is French. So I asked Victor, what's happening? And he said they're all graduates from the Faculty of Agronomy at the University of Havana. And if you have a second, I'll give you another little personal experience, or you prefer not? It's the same to me.
All right. I'll let you say.
Well, I was in Namibia. I was talking to a general, a woman, a doctor who was the head of the medical services of Namibia, and the conversation in English was a little stilted. So I thought, why don't we try Spanish? And their Spanish was better than mine, and my Spanish is excellent. She was a survivor of the South African massacre at Kasinga, a Namibian refugee camp in Angola in 1978. And as a child, with a lot of other Namibian children, she had been brought to Cuba. She had grown studying in Cuban school. She had graduated as a doctor at the University of Havana. And this is a reality that comments like our friend from Eritrea or any other cannot erase the thousands of people who were trained by the Cubans in Cuba, all expenses paid by the Cuban government. No one can erase this reality.
Yeah. No, if I could just add, I often think of what would Africa be like if it wasn't for Castro's intervention. Now, I assure you today would be a whole lot different. We still would be fighting a lot of the imperialistic forces. And when you do go to Namibia right now, and you see a program where the women, for instance, they have a policy called Zebra, where half of the government would be women, half would be men. They enforce it. I mean, the next president, the prime minister, is going to be the next head of state there because of it. But this all came from the association with Castro and with the Cubans, and that led to social justice and a more social and justice society. So
you still think, Melvin, that Castro's influence is still going to live on, especially in parts of Southern Africa, Namibia, Angola?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, absolutely. I see statues. I see 100 years from now, we'll be talking about Castro and Cuba and Southern Africa.
I'm going to throw this question to all of you, starting with you, Netfa, because in a speech once Castro said, "You can condemn me, but it doesn't matter. History will acquit me." Do you think history will judge? How do you think history will judge Fidel Castro?
It's already happening. I mean, even before you passed on, this history was already etched, and we even have, you know, we have people who have written a lot of books, and we have people who are looking at it. So, yes, history will absolve me was the quote that he made when he was actually being prosecuted by the Batista dictatorship before they imprisoned him. And then was let out 2 years later with amnesty under an amnesty agreement. And then it's proven that history absolves them, that what they were fighting for at that time was for the liberation of Cuba from neocolonialism. And so the masses of the people of Cuba wanted a different society, and they banded around those compatriots, those combatants that they formed around Castro, and that's how they were able to bring about the revolution. And as far as, I mean, like the two guests have said, the imprint on the internationalism, the really genuine internationalism that exists to this day, continues to this day, is that Fidel says that one of his proudest achievements are the white coats, as he's referring to the doctors, not just the Cuban doctors that go and serve in other places, but also those that they train free of charge, but unconditionally. The only thing they ask of them is that they return to their countries and use their with the skills that they learned in medicine for good, not for profit, but to serve the people. That's all. And of course, there's no way to enforce that, but you still train people in spite of that. And so no one, I mean, the Latin American School of Medicine, they have many more than probably any other place in Latin America. Thousands of students are going through there, and they're leaving Cuba with being impressed, not just by having learned medicine, but they also are able to tap into that genuine desire for people to actually do good and to help people selflessly.
Now, Melvin, what's your take on that again? Because how will history judge Fidel Castro in Africa? And some of the comments we are reading from the social media is that he was involved in just certain parts of Africa. Africa is huge, many, many countries, and I see Professor is just shaking his hand.
Yeah, I think history is going to be kind to Castro. I think you look at some of the people who came out of the revolution. Look at Mugabe, for instance, and you know, I see 40 years of, you know, you talk about dictatorship, you know, I see the country has not gone the way it should have gone, you know, but I see in Namibia it's going the way it should go. So there's some contradictions there. I see South Africa itself, you know, it has not gone the way Castro might have envisioned it, you know. But I think the young people, I think the future of Africa is going to look back at the intervention of Castro in Cuba as a very positive thing for Africa. And I think the future is going to be kind. The history is going to be kind toward Castro.
The reason I was shaking my head is because the humanitarian assistance of Cuba was not limited to Southern Africa. For instance, the example I gave of Guinea-Conakry, and was extended to most of Africa, actually. Now, in terms of how history will judge Fidel, I have no idea, because history books very often are written by scoundrels. There is a lot of manipulation of history. But I know how history should judge Fidel Castro. And this is with the words of Mandela when he went to Cuba in 1991, and he said, "I come here with the sense of the immense debt that is owed to the people of Cuba. What other people can show to a record more selfless than Cuba has demonstrated in its relationship with Africa?" This is what should be the judgment of history, if one can eliminate manipulations and lies.
You know, let me take some calls from our viewers in Africa. And I'll go to Nigeria. Patrick from Nigeria, you're very welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Patrick, what's your question?
Good evening, ma'am.
Good evening.
You know, our guest. The lesson we have to learn from our late brother for 47 years, all Cuban trained doctors in Nigeria are doing very, very fine. Because there was a program here in Nigeria last 2 weeks. Honestly speaking, those doctors, in short, they confessed. And you look at the scholarship he gave during that regime, that 47 years, it was okay for our brothers and sisters. Many of them benefited. I doubt whether some scholarship will come back looking at the present recession that is going on in the African continent. You see, our leaders today, they learned a lot from the 47 years in Dr. Francis. And I'm sure African leaders learned from that place, the sick tight syndrome in office. That is what, like, thank God, he decided to leave the office this time around. Now, my question is, will the present regime in Cuba maintain the above status quo of what late Fidel Castro did in Cuba? Thank you very much. Have a blessed day.
Thank you, Patrick. And let me take one more call from Uganda, and then we're going to discuss that. Samuel from Uganda, you're very welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening, Esther. How are you for the first time?
I'm very well, thank you, Samuel. What's your question?
All right. Let me ask Mr. Pierre Bridges. Mr. Pierre, today Castro was communist. While most of the African countries were Anglophone and Francophone countries, that is, Anglophone meaning they were colonized by Britain, Francophone means that they were colonized by France. Now, supposing the audience in the diaspora say, wait a minute, wasn't Fidel Castro an adventurer? Because he came to Southern Africa to struggle against apartheid. What is the take, Mr. Pierre? And thank you, my sister, Gizui.
You're very welcome, Samuel. I don't know which one to start with. One specific question is for you.
But I didn't understand.
You didn't understand. He's asking, he spoke about Fidel Castro actually just going to Africa on adventure. That's what I thought. Even though he mentioned that, you know, he separated Africa into Anglophone, English-speaking, and the Francophone, the French-speaking countries. What did you understand from Samuel? That part.
I heard one part of him saying it was he an adventurer or something going into Southern
Africa. It
didn't
look
to
me like there was much contribution. It looked like he was there for some sort of adventure. And then again from Nigeria, Patrick did say that, you know, some of those people that probably are emulating Castro have stayed on for long. And he went on to praise Yahya Jammeh of Gambia for conceding defeat after being in power for 22 years.
Well, if I understand the question about what did Castro achieve in Africa, that's his question?
I would probably round it up that way. Because
okay,
it wasn't
fine.
Quite clear.
In 1975, he defeated the South African invasion of Angola, which was encouraged by the United States. If this invasion had been successful, crushing the MPLA, the South Africans would have imposed in Luanda a client government, which would have done what essentially the apartheid regime wanted. And essentially, a victory of the axis of evil, Washington, Pretoria, would have meant strengthening the grip of apartheid over the people of Southern Africa. And there is something very interesting, for instance. The reaction of the major black newspaper of South Africa, The World, to the Cuban victory. The World wrote in an editorial, black Africa is riding the crest of a wave generated by the Cuban victory in Angola. Black Africa is tasting the heady wine of the possibility of total liberation. And it's not only this, that for the first time, not only the South Africans were unable to impose their proxy government in Angola, but for the first time, in modern history, in recent history, the white giants were defeated. But it is the contribution to the liberation of Southern Africa. As General Heldenhuis, who was the commander of the South African occupation forces in Namibia, said, the real war of independence of Namibia started with the independence of Angola, because this gave the Namibian rebels what is necessary, indispensable for a successful guerrilla war, which is a safe rear guard. The contribution of Cuba to the liberation struggle in Rhodesia, the help to the ANC, this is all generated by the Cuban victory in Angola in 1975. And Cuba did it. Cuba decided to send its troops in 1975 without informing the Soviet Union and against the willing of the Soviet Union. And no one said it as well as the CIA. In a retrospective study in 1981, when it said the Cuban intervention was a unilateral decision by Fidel Castro, decided at the last moment in response to the desperate appeals of the MPLA to stop the South African invasion.
Now, one of the callers did allude to the continuation of Castro's legacy, and I'm, you know, persuaded to ask, with the Cuban president now, Raul Castro, saying he will defend his late brother's position as a socialist, with renewed relations now with the United States, and do you see that really happening, Netwa?
Okay, well, let me just start also by talking about. Let me just really quickly mention the initial relationship with Cuba and Africa goes all the way back to Algeria, 2 years after the independence of the Cuban Revolution. And so they started, that was their first medical missions, where they were accepting children who were orphaned or wounded by the war, and they brought them to Cuba to treat them. And so then they eventually end up giving military support when a U.S.-backed neocolonial project in Morocco was trying to invade Algeria. That was the first one, the earliest stages. We also don't want to forget their assistance in the Congo, when Che was sent there as an emissary to actually help and assist in a trained Congolese fight trying to fight against Belgium. So that's just some early things I want to touch on. But about the last question, I think we because of how Cuba is spun, it's partly because of Western media to put so much emphasis on individuals and the dictator Castro, but also his influence as a man, Fidel as a person. He's very influential, very there present. But it makes us also negate other things. So it wasn't just Raul that said they would continue, but it's all the Cubans. I mean, there's a National Assembly, there's vast amounts of Cubans who are dedicated to the project of Cuba. When the funeral was in Cuba, people were saying, I am Fidel Castro. This is millions of people. Mm-hmm. Now, we have the person you had on, Frank Calzone, who actually makes a lot of money through U.S.-sponsored projects that are designed to overthrow the Cuban
Revolution. We're running out of time, and I have a quick question for Melvin, because...
So the answer is yes, it will continue.
It will continue. Why do you think, and very briefly, that Nelson Mandela respected Castro so much? What did the two have in common? Because Mandela was a respected African statesman.
Well, I mean, I think Nelson Mandela arguably is the most revered figure in the history of the continent. And what he saw was the reality of the struggle. And, you know, you read all the literature would tell you about this struggle. And the bigger thing is that he fought the United States. He stood up to the United States. And, you know, the same thing with Ethiopia. I mean, I was there for Mengistu's time. And you say what you want to say about Mengistu. The early part of the revolution was dynamic. I think the fact is the military guys didn't understand what to do with governance that led to a lot of the problems that we, you know, encountered. But I think that Mandela said, you know, while he was a friend of the United States, he said, I'm a friend of the United States. I love the United States, but I'm also a friend of Castro. And just because he's not your friend doesn't mean he's not my friend. So.
Right. It looks like we'll have to wrap it there, unless you have
very
two
quick.
Words.
Very quick.
Mandela explained why his relationship with Castro. He said in a speech that in 1975, when he was in jail, he heard the news of the arrival of the Cuban troops to Angola, and that it was the first time that people from another continent had come, not to take something away from Africa,
you,
but
Professor.
To bring.
Thank you. Wish we had more time. And on that note, thanks to our distinguished
distinguished guests, Professor Piero Gliesis, Melvin Foote, and Netva Freeman, and to affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Buddy. And on behalf of the Voice of America, thank you for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. And a very good night from our VOA global headquarters here in Washington.